Beyond presents Fragmentary Spoilers. Lucidus and Dubious by the Unknown. Good title. So, this is a very long fragment, so long that I wonder how much of it is really lost. Basically, we don't have the end. Hence this full spoilers episode of a fragmentary play. Follows are some introductory notes bouncing around our full cast audio recording of the dialogue. You're not going to be getting a plain text recording of the play at the end because, again, as with some of our other more complete texts, there isn't going to be that much of a fundamental difference and it'll be a bit odd to make you listen to it twice. So if you're listening in the future, look for the actual full cast audio adaptation further up the podcast list. Otherwise, this is our spoilers episode, and this is an exercise that some listeners won't enjoy. If it ain't for you, move on. But if you're still listening, let's enter spoiler land.
Spoiler land.
I've got to stop doing that. Anyway, this is Lucidus and Dubious, one of the two Winchester dialogues, and dating to somewhere in the middle of the 15th century. It's a disputation between two figures. One is a learned teacher figure, Lucidus, and the other an ex-pupil, Dubious. They have a debate, which ends with the breaking off of the fragment. Those of you who've listened to our various takes on Tudor interludes will recognise this kind of thing. It's very witty and witless, or Gentleness and Nobility by John Heywood. The importance of this text and the other Winchester dialogue, Occupation and Idleness, is the date. They are 50 years older, at least, than any other similar text, if not much more. Small-scale debate dramas were in existence and complex products by 1450, which of course means that they're an active form from probably much older, though sadly no other earlier text survives. Some would argue that Lucidus and Dubious is not really a play, and I waver occasionally on that point. On the one hand, it is the kind of dialogue debate text one finds knocking about, using the form of a dialogue to instruct. On the other hand, it does seem to have asides, and there is a distinct relationship at play between the two characters. Being short, at least in its damaged form, it should hold an audience's interest, albeit unlikely to threaten the West End anytime soon. So, the text starts with Lucidus setting out his stall. "Here's Dr. Lucidus, and he has come to talk to you, so shut up and listen." The first indicator of a performative text.
"The foremost father that formed you all, the wit and wisdom of his son dear, the lore of the Holy Ghost, which I call to mark the matter to your mind which ye shall hear. My name is Dr. Lucidus, a doctor of the law. To you hither I come, thee sooth for to say, questions to assail that been to men unknaw. Hearken, therefore, good sires, fair I you pray."
Regular listeners will be reminded of the opening of Gentleness and Nobility by John Heywood. A speaker enters and talks to the audience. That play had at least some sense of place, but this text doesn't. Like Witty and Witless, it's sort of set in the room that you're already in. It's a null space, somewhere that doesn't really function outside of this performance. Or should we say it's, say, a schoolroom? It could be that. Or perhaps it's something closer to a public space, a preaching spot where there might be a more general audience about. Wherever it is set, Dr. Lucidus is talking to an audience and challenging them to test him on his knowledge and ability.
"A doctor of divinity, full wide am I know. Clearly can I answer to questions of doubt that beeth now on the people wonderly so, and moveth them at their maundery when they be on a rout. But what? I know them every one. I doubt never one. some man may prove. Therefore would I that some man boldly a question might move.
And, having prompted the audience to ask him a question, he gets a response. Again, like the latter plays of John Heywood, some 70, 80 years later, this is an interruption, something to... shock is too extreme a term, but nudge the audience, perhaps, with surprise. There's a plant in the room!
Hey! God thee save, Dr. Gent! Mine own master, Veriman, I know you by the speech!
Someone speaks up, and they seem to know Lucidus. It is possible that the first line of Dubius is to be shouted out, and the second is a kind of half-aside, for though Lucidus does respond to it, he clearly doesn't register that he should know this audience member. Anyway, Dubius has called out, and Lucidus asks...
Why so? Child, what is thy name?
Dubius, all in game, that you want to teach?
What is thy name, Dubius?
Yea, sir, forsooth it is.
Dubius is... doubtful for to say. This is a quaint name.
So I am doubtful in good faith. Thereof I bear the fame.
Nominative determinism there. It's so difficult to remember old students. Lucidus, put on the spot a tad, asks what Dubius has got up to since school. Dubius has tried various jobs, from serving the religious to serving lords, and has challenged them and their views in disputation, not dissimilarly as Lucidus has, but posing questions which leads his betters towards heresy.
Dubius, thou wert my clerk. Say where thou dwellest noweth.
Oh, with every man on his work, Dubius is full caliph. And sooth for to tell, spare I now somewhat I dwell with... religion in cell, in city, town, upland, in sooth, I have dwelled there with kings and lords, both to wit, both quid and quare, and I have made on this land a new courtesy fand, that when man beeth his set and are served at their meat, I bring forth quare and quid and serve them therewith, that is to say, why and what, and so each man speaketh of that, so that a burl slave, without any man's leave, and bring forth quid and quare, and priest and clerk he will not spare, and move so high, such a question, then he confoundeth his reason. And so, through the answer of what and why, both fallen in to heresy.
Lucidus is worried about this. Was Dubius leading these people to heresy on purpose?
On heresy? God forbid! Speak thou thy words soft.
Oh, yes, sir. So God me speed. Openly and oft.
Then it cometh through Dubius meaving.
Yea, sir, that is no leasing. It is mine own craft.
I pray thee, heardest thou in country men such questions meave?
Sir, I will you tell each word, and ye will give me leave.
Say on, Dubius, for thy fay.
I will, master, without delay, your wit will I prove. The last question is this, that I heard moved, Iwis. Sith God made all thing of naught, and he was ere the world were wrought, it seemeth before the world's making that he led a solitary living.
A question of the nature of God and his living before the existence of the created universe. He was all alone? Lucidus has an answer. God wasn't alone because he imagined and foreknew all the things he would create.
Nay, alone might he not be. Take heed and thou shalt see a carpenter that shall make a building. He cast it first in his thinking. And erst that he make his gin, on his cunning cometh each pin. So God in foreknowing had all creatures ere he them made. So they with God in foreknowing ere than they had outward being. Thus God alone might not be, by this example thou mayest see.
Between you and me, I'm not wholly convinced about that one. But Dubius has no response to it, except to ask another question. There will be a lot of this. It's a Q&A panel, after all.
Yet a question I ask of thee. Why made God all creatures?
For there should such thing be that should receive of his goodness.
Well, there's a bit of circular logic. Come on, Jubius. There's an inn there with such solipsism. No, no, okay. Jubius just asks another question about how God created Adam. Was it a literal physical action?
Oh, sith God made the first man, that man saith was Adam. Tell all men, free and bond, made God Adam with his hond?
Nay, with his word he made him, out of the sea slime.
Yes.
That every man, both more and less, should think how brottle he is of kend, and how he shall hear hence pass as wind or word, and make an end.
Why made he him of so foul a matter?
To shame with Lucifer, that he that was made of so foul a thing should be his overling, and that man should sit in joy on high, from the which he fell and fly.
There are some interesting points. Slime, a term for, you know, earth here, isn't the most impressive of building materials, and the reason is that it makes Lucifer, who was made of skybeams and puppy dog tails, should be superseded by something made of slime. In your face, Lucifer! Yeah! No return on that one. Tee up for another question, Jubius. We've covered Adam, now Eve.
Yet another question I can. Whereof made God Eve?
Of Adam's flesh and bone, as we wholly believe.
Why was she not made and bore of the earth as Adam was afore?
Sir, the skill is this and the point, that as they were one flesh and bone, they should be one every joint in love and heart, one and one. And each man also, and his wife, sith they be one flesh and blood, love should let him from strife and make of him one will. And move.
Adam and Eve are one flesh, so they couldn't be made separately. Moving on. But why did God design Adam to be able to sin? I mean, design flaw or what?
No, why made not God Adam so that he ne might have do no sin? Meseemeth it had be welly do that every man should heaven win.
Sir, God made Adam on such manner that he was free of work and will, and each of his aftercomer to do whether they would, good or ill, so man stood on his free will to choose what he would do, and as his work is good or ill, so must his meed be thereto. That if he would evil forsake, then must goodness his meed acquit, and if he will to evil take, his own will he mote it wit.
Jubius, again, doesn't really pick Lucidus up on the nature of free will, but he does spin a variant question. It's one thing to allow mankind free will, it's another to just leave temptation lying around. Didn't God think of that?
Yet, tell here, before us all, one thing that I shall ask of thee. Sith Adam would in sin fall, why suffered God him tempted be?
God suffered for this intent, that sith Adam would in sin fall, Christ, God's Son verament, should make us free that so were thrall. With his death after on the tree, he thought he should buy mankin, and therefore Adam suffered he to tempted be and fall in sin.
Nay!
So God let man fall so that he could be saved later. I mean, Jubius isn't having that. That would make God the bad guy?
Nay, pardee! God is right and rightfulness, and would that no wrong were done. That were wrong and all amiss to suffer slee his own son, and namely, for man full of sin, to suffer and innocent to die and spill. God would no such work begin. He may none do in wrong ne will.
Ah, sir, God suffered his son Mun be dead through charity, love. That was right. To put away man from the quid for none other it do might. And rightful love and reason would that God's son the fiend should destroy, for other was of no might so bold that of the fiend might have mastery. And as the fiend had all men slew through the venom of his envy, so Christ the fiend adown should throw and give man life when he should die.
So there, Christ's suffering was done out of charity and love. It was the only way to deal with the fiend. No other way available for an all-powerful creator. Absolutely none. Dubius walks past this open goal and moves on to logistics. What was the time span of paradise? One of those fun-time theological discussions to while away the years.
Now, good sir, gentle and wise, how long was Adam and Eve in paradise?
7 hours they were in paradise. 7 hours and no more. And for an apple of little price, they were put out, both two. The third hour after Adam's making, Adam gave all beasts their name. The sixth hour, without leasing, was made Eve, the first dame. And anon of the apple she ate, to trespass she began. And though she was put out by the head, both she and eke Adam.
7 hours. There you have it. No more. But Lucidus has brought up the apple, and Dubius is curious about why it was special.
Why? Why was the apple so worthy that all men therefore should dead be? A man may have a peck for a penny, misseemeth it may not so be.
Nay, not for the apple's worthiness, but for his unbuxomness, that he would of the apple note that God had him both forebode. Therefore every servant, as I read, should obey his sovereign, on all goodness to have his meed, and to avoid hell pay.
Oh, it wasn't the apple itself, apparently, just ignoring of the commandment not to eat. Moving on, what was paradise like?
Lord, sir, what thing is paradise, and what place may it be?
Sir, a place of all delight it is. Hearken, and I will tell in thee. It is a place green and sweet, of spices, trees, and of flowers, without hunger, cold, or heat, without tempest, or showers. Rivers running, song full sweet, mirth, joy, without an end. Life and health shall ever meet, age and sickness shall thence wend. There is fruit, folk with to feed, lusty to meet for all sickness. There is no sorrow, doubt, nay dread, everlasting life and all goodness.
Now that was a merry place. And had I be there that Adam was, I would not have go then. For he is right a great fool that is in so merry an hole, and holdeth him not therein. But, sir, sire, was Adam sorry for his trespass?
Yea, forsooth, that he was. And for his trespass sake, he would fain amends make.
So paradise was lovely. Adam was a bit of an idiot. So why did it all go so south? I mean, God of love, people.
Now, sith God was full of all goodness, of mercy and grace to men full of sin, and Adam was sorry of his wickedness, why nee had God saved him?
Hearken. Lucifer was put from heaven for no deadly sin that he wrought, but for he thought to be even to God within on his thought. Then, sith God damned an angel for sin of pride only in thought, he might not by rightful doom well save Adam that sin outwrought.
It's a precedent thing. Well, God damned an angel couldn't go soft on a human, could he? Still, it's a bit harsh, mate.
How may God worshipped be to see his handwork damned so? A man is like God, perdie. How may he suffer him in woe?
Thou leavest a question of pity, but hearken, and I will tell thee. A child that were of service fair and had a father strong and rich, if his father would make him his heir and in heart loved him much, on case this child would his father spies, his laws, his love, his hests forsake, it must please his father in all wise his heritage from him take. So who forsaketh God's law, though he be like God verament, reason will that he be throw from bliss into torment, and all rightfulness is pleasant to God and all his goodness.
Ay, I see well by thy meaning, a man must ever God please.
Yea, that is no leasing, or else he shall his heritage lease.
And that point of obedience covered, we're back to logistics. Adam and Eve got 7 hours in paradise. What did Lucifer get in heaven? And what did he do to get kicked out?
Good sire, tell for your honour, how long was Lucifer in heaven?
Forsooth, not fully an hour that he nay fell then.
I pray you, sir, what sin had he do aught?
None other but that he was proud in thought, thinking to have a better state than God had set him at. And for that thought, I you tell, that angel was cast to hell, and with him fell as many more as consented to pride also. Therefore, let no man be proud in heart within, nay work without.
What? Fell they all to hell in fear?
Nay, sir, some dwelleth among us here, to prove men in their living, and know what that men will do, if they may from bliss men bring and carry them to hell woe.
Now that's a scary thought, isn't it? Not all the demons made it to hell. Some are wandering about, tempting people. But why would they bother?
Where to so? Where to so? What helpeth it the fiend do so, to bring men to fire and pain? Meseemeth they worketh themself woe, his work may not avail them. Why, what is the fiend the better at ease, that a man is in pain pit to make sorrow and pain evermore? Meseemeth it is a lewd wit. He is worthy evil to fare that loveth to make sorrow and care.
Thus may I answer on this manner. One cause is that he nay would that man should come to heaven clear, thereas he have been should. For it were to him greater paining than all the pains that he might bear, to see man that was so foul a thing come to bliss, where he was heir. And for that were to him more confusion, he ceaseth never from temptation. Another reason is this, for he is the porter of hell, and tormenteth souls, ywis, that for sin there doth dwell. As right will I read, that wickedness will have a wicked meed. And so for voiding of his shame, and for to do his office aright, he bringeth ever men in blame, with all his power, day and night.
Reasonable bits of psychology there. The bad like to see others brought to a worse torment. But by now, Lucidus has had enough of being badgered by some boy, which leads Dubius to reveal something more about their past relationship.
Now, I come never in no place that me be hapt no such grace that such a boy, so young a thing, put to me such opposing.
Pater, thou madest right now boasting, and saidest thou wouldest answer to all thing. Thou shalt know that thou comest hither to wrath, here to answer or to oppose, for thou shalt find a child of Bath to cast a question at thy nose. And I thank God I find thee here.
Why so, beau seer?
Tell why I can. For thou art the same man, for thou taught'st me few year. I know him by the great hood. He would me beat as he were wood, and make my buttocks sore. Oh, but here thou mayest me not areach. With sputing I will myself areak. I have ordained all therefore.
I used to be your pupil, and you beat me something rotten. Grr. Lucidus is unrepentant. You deserved it because you were dubious.
Sir, I did but as reason is. I beat thee, for thou wert dubious between earnest and gain.
Marry, misseemed, thou didst amiss, for every clerk is dubious. I cowed the god's grave.
Ah, sir, I come not hither for to chide.
No, thou hast moved a good board. I will thee shame of thy word, and thou wilt abide.
Dubious isn't letting Lucidus off the hook just yet. You promised a debate, so debate me. And he tries to use Latin against his old master.
Why, what canst thou say?
I will ask a question without delay to reprove thy pride. Proprio filio suo non prepersit deus sed pro nobis omnibus tradit illum. God would that his son Jesus for man dead should be. Then I would wit what did Judas amiss that him betray would.
It's a good question. Judas was, in a sense, fulfilling a role to betray Jesus to the authorities, so why should he be punished?
For sith God would that he should be dead, and Judas did the same, it seemeth they wrought by one red, and Judas was not to blame, for there may no man spill that fulfilleth God's will.
Nay, nay, God's works and Judas beeth not like in one case. For God took his son man to save for charity and love on all wise, and Judas him sold, silver to have only for false covetise.
Ah, because Judas didn't betray his master for the right reason. He didn't do it because it was ordained or anything. He did it through greed. He repeats the point in Latin to show he can do the Latin too. Dubious is not deterred, and he asks a just monumentally dumb question designed to set up the answer and not to be a proper question in of itself. I mean, seriously, who asks this shit?
Yet, answer once to me, here openly and anon. Why was his cross made of tree more than of iron and of stone?
Ah, well mayst thou hope, Dubious. This was the cause, I tell thee, for all the sorrow and the rake first to man of a tree, when Adam would the apple take. Therefore God died upon a tree, and through a tree amends would make. And this is the skill, perdie, why the cross of tree was shaped. Ut qui in ligno vicerat, in ligno quoque vinceretur per Christum Dominum nostrum.
Now, Dubious goes back to logistics. If Jesus paid the ransom for the souls languishing in hell, who did he pay it to?
When bought Christ the souls of man, sith the fiend them had in ward, to whom paid Christ his ransom? This astonieth my wit full hard.
Forsooth, to the Father of Heaven. He shed his blood full leaf and dear for the souls on hell beneathen, to have him out of hell power. For that japer Lucifer knows not but his jailer to torment him oft. And the souls, each one, they were prisoners on and on to God that sitteth on loft. Hec magister sententiarum.
He paid it to God. Anyway, Dubious now asks how precious was this death?
I pray thee, sir, yet tell me this. Was Christ's death to his father so precious that it might all men quite?
The worthiness of Christ's death, no man that hath breath may it tell or write.
Oh, Dubious isn't letting that go. Come on, show you're working.
How? Example, let me see.
Then take good heed and hearken to me. And God stood now thee before, that made all this world of naught, and thou knew it in thine heart more, that it were he that all hath wrought. Then, if one would say to thee, slay this man here thee before, or else sore pardee, all this world shall be lore. Wouldest thou then Christ slay, and thou knewest that he were that?
Christ forbid it me that any man should do that.
Tell me why, and why thou knowest him slay.
For Christ's life is more worthy than a thousand worlds may be, for of him cometh life and living, and each thing hath his being.
Forsooth, then, as precious was his dying, that was all man's beginning.
To be fair, Dubius fell into that one. His next gambit is on why Jesus was born of Mary and why it came about as it did.
Yet thou shalt be opposed. Once more, why would Christ be ybore more of a maid than of another woman?
If I were prayed thereto, answer I can. On four manners why God maketh man. First, of the earth, as God made Adam. The second manner, of man alone. And so of Adam come Eve, the third manner of man's moan, as when woman giveth him life. The fourth manner God would man make of clean maid without ore, as when he did manhood take, and for man a maid was born.
Yea, though thou be felon sly, yet shalt thou not escape so, for yet thou tellest me not why Christ would be bore so.
Ah, doubtful dubious, doubtful dubious. The cause thereof is this. The first maid that ever was Eve, Adam's wife. She wrought the first trespass and made all our woe and strife. And as through a maid death come in and all men were lore, Christ so would, by Mary Virgin, all the world restore.
It's all interconnected, you see. Eve, Mary, Eva, Ave. Oh, Dubius had really hoped to put Lucidus down, and Lucidus is all bring it on.
Now, in good fay, Lucidus, I hoped when I come hither wis, and yet I think for to assay to have do thee shame.
Do on, I thee pray. Begin, on God's name.
By the rood, and I will begin. Sith Christ was without sin, I would wit why that he would take death aught. Meseemeth it helpeth him naught, neither grace he had thereby, for he was full of grace enough.
Yeah, why would he take death? I mean, he was great already, I think. Lucidus isn't impressed with the question. Like, I thought you were going to ask really hard questions. I mean, I've got at least three answers to this.
Ah, dubious, dubious, many questions hast thou that be it subtle and sly. For his need, write not, but for three causes it was wrought that I will here show thee. For water hath properties three, and what they beeth, I tell him thee. It maketh things clean, that is the first. The second is well seen that it quencheth a man's thirst. It cleanseth an image that is foul.
That knoweth every fool.
Sir?
Don't interrupt.
Suffer me speak my lust. So the grace of the Holy Ghost, when a child taketh his baptem, it cleanseth his sin most, that of birth come to him. The first of soul within, it quencheth it with God's word. The image of God defouled with sin, it cleanseth it both end and o'er.
So Jesus is like water, and he refreshes all the parts, or something. Dubius returns to logistics. How long was Jesus dead? And Dubius is really cross that he keeps losing the argument.
Yet a question to thine head. How long lay Christ dead? That I would thou toldest me.
To speak so angrily, it is no need, for I speak easily, pardee. Sir, 40 hours and no more.
Good sir, what betokeneth thou?
On 40 hours bith 4 sits 10. That betokeneth the commandment, the four parts of the world ye do to him. It meaneth none other in this intent that the four parts of the world about should to the ten hests allout.
But now Jubius has got a really good point. This is a proper stumper. I won't answer this one.
Yet thou shalt be once awaked. Was Christ laid in his tomb all naked?
Yea, sir, that he was.
Then, would I wit in this case, how come he to clothes so soon?
Sir, he is almighty, and ever was. And the air he turned anon into clothes through his might, that many men them did see in, and when he stied to heaven bright, then turned it to air again.
How did Jesus get clothes? 'Cause he's magic, innit? Jubius falls back on logistics. He's really keen on time. From how old was Jesus when he started teaching, to the issue of modern priests who don't do as they say.
One thing turbleth much my thought. How old was Christ ere that he taught?
Sir, 30 year old. Christ then he would teach. To teach that no man should be bold within that age for to preach.
Of preaching I would somewhat hear, as prelates and priests should preach, but it set my heart on fire, for they do not as they teach. But, sir, what meed shall such crave?
Sir, thereto an answer thou shalt have. He that one word preacheth well and doth evil himself, he is like a bright candle that lighteth to men and wasteth himself. Some neither liveth well, neither also teacheth well, neither by words, neither by work. They be like hell smoke that strangleth man's sight and throat and bringeth men into hell dark.
A follow-on question, then. If bad people perform the Mass, does that ruin it?
Lord, one thing fain I would wit, sith good and evil doth Mass sing, whether the sacrament made of such be as good on all thing as of them that liveth well.
Yea, forsooth, every dell. As good it is of him that is not as of a priest that is aught. For no priest's goodness, neither no priest's wickedness, may it appear, nay amend.
Tell me that to the end.
Take heed to me, and by example thou shalt see. An the sun shine full clear upon a dunghill, or a gunge, or upon as fair a thing here as any man may tell with tongue, neither the gunge's foulness, neither this thing's fairness, nay, may the same appear nay amend.
This is sooth, sir, verament.
Nay more may a priest's goodness, neither the priest's wickedness, do to the sacrament.
Jubius seems to be turning a corner here. The question's less attempts to trip up, perhaps more genuine curiosity. Is he being pulled away from his dubious position? Maybe not. Jubius then asks if people can get damned from the sacrament. Lucidus points out it isn't the goodness of the sacrament that counts, it's the goodness of the person. Though he does this in Latin, not English.
Yea, I would that thou wouldest tell me, then, if the sacrament is so good, and is Christ's flesh and blood, and in no wise may evil be, how may so good a thing be cause of a man's damning? That I pray thee tell me, for I have heard say oftentime that a man of evil live is damned if he it take.
Yea, that is not for the sacrament's sake. Bonum non solum participante prodest, sed etiam obest si contra interdictum, ab eo accipitur in quo non debet.
Oi, don't show off the Latin. That's cheating. Tell me the answer properly, in English.
Thou prattlest Latin fast. Marry, I trow thou be aghast, or else thou canst not at last, I trow, answer hereto.
Ah, sir, ye be hasty two and two. Sir, through all paradise wide and broad, all the fruit was right good and profitable to man enough. But when Adam thereof took against God's forebode, for his inobedience, himself sloth, so he that is in sin wrapped, he is to God inobedient. Then shall he be damned for that when he receiveth the sacrament. Good dubious, good brother, by this example know that other.
Ah, but if you know your priest is a wrong'un, do you still obey him?
If a priest be of evil living that have cure and souls to keep, shall men be to him obeying that would I fain weet?
Although they be of not living and their hests by God's law, thou shalt obey to their saying, and not only to them of a straw, but to God that sitteth above, thou shalt obey with heart and love.
Dubious is still dubious. Clues in the name. If the priest is a bad'un, does that mean he's going to get a worse punishment than I after death, eh?
But yet answer once to me. And a priest be bound with sin, how should he assoil me or thee when he is deeper than we therein? For, and I were bound fast and close that I might not move in no behalf, how should I make another man loose that were as fast as I myself?
Sir, every priest that hath cure, none outtake whatever he be, and he standeth not in open censure, then standeth it thus as I tell thee. And it be proved, Iwis, be he never so cursed a wretch, not open, but all prove he may assoil by office of the church, and Christ him assoileth, and not he. Non enim ipse Christus per eorum officium bigat et soluit. Hec lucidarius sive lumen laicorum.
Basically, yeah. And with that wrap-up of Latin, again, probably a gloss rather than dialogue, the fragment ends. We can't know if there's a lot more or if that's about it. It feels like there isn't much more to come. It feels like we're sort of pulling now towards some sort of resolution, but goodness only knows of this sort of text. They probably could have kept going for hours. And it is a really interesting text. It's a very didactic dialogue, but it does feel like it might have been designed for performance. There are the odd ghost of an aside. There's a backstory between the two protagonists. You beat the crap out of me when I was a child. So this may not be a brand leader, but I think it will have a little corner of our teensy-weensy corner of our repertoire. If only for training purposes for actors. It just stretches the muscles as a performer, and I did enjoy running it with Liza for this recording. So maybe it'll be seen in the wild one day. Maybe. If you have any thoughts about my brief breakdown of the text, or if you have any disagreements with my thoughts, or if I'm in plain error, let me know. I might re-edit based on your ideas, or not. And that's it from this spoiler episode. There's an exploring session on the podcast already and links to material from the other Winchester dialogue as well. Because I won't be adding much to the full cast audio adaptation edit, I won't run the so-called plain text here, so you can catch the full edit anon. But till then, I've been your host, Robert Crichton, and Dubious, and many thanks to Liza Graham, who was Lucidus. Goodbye.